with Bob McChesney is next.
Greetings. Welcome to Media Matters. I'm your host, Bob McChesney, coming to you live today from WILL AM 580 in beautiful Urbana, Illinois, on this lovely, blustery, autumny Sunday afternoon, the first Sunday in November 2005. I'm coming to you from Campbell Hall, of course, right here in Urbana. And today we've got a great show for you. We'll have a guest joining us on the phones from Colorado, one of the legends of independent and alternative media in the United States over the past 25 years, David Barsamian, on the air to talk to us about alternative radio, his program, his many books, including his new book, an interview book with Noam Chomsky called Imperial Ambitions. That's today on Media Matters, but first let's go to Media Minutes.
Any views or opinions expressed by the hosts of Media Minutes are their own and do not necessarily reflect those of this station, its management, or licensee.
Welcome to Media Minutes, a weekly review of news relating to the intersection of media and democracy. I'm John Anderson.
And I'm Kimberly Cronick.
The Federal Communications Commission gave a Halloween treat to phone companies when it approved the mergers of SBC with AT&T and Verizon with MCI. The deals, worth collectively about $25 billion, slid through on a 4-0 vote after being delayed twice as the two Democrats on the commission, Michael Copps and Jonathan Adelstein, bargained for public interest conditions on the mergers. Two of them, said Copps, prevent the newlywed conglomerates from raising rates or otherwise discriminating in the provision of access to their networks.
The more powerful and concentrated our facilities providers grow, the more they have the ability and perhaps even the incentive to close off internet lanes and block IP byways. I'm not saying this is part of their business plans today. I am saying we create the power to inflict such harms only at great risk to consumers, innovation, and our nation's competitive posture.
However, these provisions are only good for 2.5 years. While he signed off on the mergers, Commissioner Jonathan Adelstein thinks the FCC's taken steps toward reassembling the old Ma Bell empire.
In a very tangible way, we reap what was sown in prior commission decisions that consistently undercut competitors' ability to offer choice to American consumers.
And he's not convinced the conditions imposed on the mergers will have lasting import.
There's much analysis in these orders that I find lacking or downright troubling. The sweeping conclusions that these mergers will have little impact on consumers would require us to take a lot on faith.
FCC approval of these deals has already had repercussions beyond the traditional telecommunications industry. Since Halloween, 4 of the country's largest cable television providers announced a formal relationship with Sprint Nextel to bundle wireless phone with cable. And major players in the world of voice over IP telephony have launched a campaign to raise their profile.
New developments in the conservative coup at the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Jeff Chester, executive director of the Center for Digital Democracy, says CPB President Patricia Harrison, a former chair of the Republican National Committee and State Department propagandist, has recently made some disturbing hires for key CPB staff positions.
Part of CPB's move to the right is bringing over propaganda experts, people who used to be at the State Department and whose job was to push the U.S. government's, Bush administration's positions in the media abroad, they're now at CPB.
There's actually a long history of crossover between U.S. public broadcasting and government-run international media outlets. For example, National Public Radio president and CEO Kevin Close first worked for the government's radio broadcast services, including The Voice of America. But Chester says Patricia Harrison's position is unique for its power to control funds for both public radio and television.
There has never been a situation where a key government propaganda officer is appointed to run the Corporation for Public Broadcasting.
Meanwhile, CPB's Inspector General has completed an investigation into allegations of abuse of power by former CPB Board Chairman Kenneth Tomlinson. Tomlinson used government funds to monitor and attack specific public radio and TV programs on spurious claims of liberal bias, and did so behind the back of the rest of the board of directors. These allegations, if true, are against the law. Chester says the report was presented to the board in a closed meeting on November 1st.
Instead of releasing it to the public, and indeed holding a public meeting, so people can learn about the findings, the GOP-CPB board is holding a meeting in secret. It has a chance, perhaps, to change the report.
The report itself is expected to be made public on November 15th. but there will be no way to know if the content has been modified. Chester says the cronyism and lack of transparency at CPB demands independent and thorough investigation.
There needs to be a complete going over of how CPB has used taxpayer funds to advance a conservative agenda in terms of its commissioning programming that reflects the interests of the Bush administration, and also trying to censor news and information programming on public broadcasting.
In a hint of what the report may hold, Ken Tomlinson tendered his resignation to the CPB board on Thursday, November 3rd. He had 1 year left on his term. In a statement, the board says Tomlinson disputes the findings of the Inspector General. Tomlinson still remains a member of the Broadcasting Board of Governors, which oversees the operations of the government's foreign broadcasting services. You've been listening to Media Minutes, a joint production of the Illinois Initiative for Media Policy Research at the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign and Free Press, a national nonpartisan organization dedicated to media democracy. For more information, visit our website at freepress.net.
The views expressed on this program are those of the host and the participants.
Okie dokie, welcome back to Media Matters. I'm your host, Bob McChesney, coming to you this Sunday, November 6, 2005, from Campbell Hall, the studios of WILL AM 580 Radio, here in beautiful Urbana, Illinois, on a blustery autumn afternoon. Our guest today is David Barsamian, the founder and director of the widely syndicated weekly show Alternative Radio, which can be heard right here on WILL every Saturday at 6 p.m., David Barsamian has authored several books of interviews with leading political thinkers, including Arundhati Roy, Howard Zinn, Tariq Ali, and in particular, Noam Chomsky. He's written his own books on public broadcasting as well and been a frequent guest on this program and earlier programs I've hosted. David Barsamian lives in Boulder, Colorado. His brand new book just came out. The American Empire Project published it, an interview book with Noam Chomsky titled Imperial Ambitions, Conversations on the Post-9/11 World, published by Metropolitan Books. It's my pleasure to welcome David Barsamian to Media Matters. David?
Thank you very much, Bob. And media do matter, indeed. And, you know, when we talk about corporate control of the media and all the developments that's occurred over the last few years, positive developments, I really think we're have a tremendous opportunity to transform the media landscape. And I think the media reform conferences and the work of freepress.net, an organization you're associated with, is really opening up some wedges. And you mentioned the new Chomsky book, and I can tell you that it's already number two, I think, in London, England. And it's on the number seven on a Los Angeles Times bestseller list. There's just a tremendous amount of interest in the media today. And I think it's, as I said, I think it's there's a great opportunity for progressives to really transform the landscape.
Well, I want to talk about that in our interview, David. But let's talk a little bit about Noam Chomsky for a second. This new book, Imperial Ambitions. How many books have you done with Noam Chomsky prior to this interview books?
It might be somewhere between 8 and 10. I kind of I'm embarrassed to say I've lost count. There have been so many, some of them in shorter forms, long forms as well. I've been working with Chomsky for more than almost 25 years now, and I think this particular book is the best of all of them. And I know people say, oh, every author is going to say that this is the best one of the series. But I think just our ability to distill a lot of disparate information and whatever talents I have in trying to ask precise questions, I think really make this the best of all of these books. And Chomsky's, you know, he's very forthcoming, and I'm asking him questions that people are asking me around the country, that people are asking you around the country, like, what should I do, for example? And another one is, don't these people know what's happening with global warming? Don't they have children and grandchildren? Aren't they concerned about the future? Things like that.
We're talking to David Barsamy on today, Media Matters. I'm your host, Bob McChesney. As we're talking about his new book, Interviews with Noam Chomsky, called Imperial Ambitions, Conversations on the Post-9/11 World. And this book is already rocketed to the top of the bestseller list. And believe me, recalling where you started from in the 1980s, David, the idea that we would have a conversation about a book that's in the top five on the Los Angeles Times bestseller list probably would have been as likely as our having a conversation about, you know, the Knicks winning 10 consecutive NBA championships. just not going to happen.
A really remote possibility given their lack of talent. But not
Chomsky's lack of talent.
To move to a lighter note, but actually I've been speaking all over the country, and there's just tremendous demand now. It's unprecedented in my life. I've never had so many requests. And as you can attest, Bob, it's not because of my good looks. There's a real thirst for knowledge, for information, from analyses and perspectives outside the corporate matrix. And I'm really looking forward to one with the Kiwanis Club here in Boulder. So I make, you know, lots of efforts to reach out to the congregations, you know, to get beyond the choir and to get to audiences that may not have access to, say, commondreams.org, or may not subscribe to the Progressive magazine, or may not, read Noam Chomsky. And so I think that's part of the task of expanding the horizons of and including new audiences. We've got to figure out ways, particularly with young people, in attracting them. And I think music and art go a long way toward doing that. And I always try and talk about, in my talks, about Gil Scott-Heron, for example, and The Revolution Will Not Be Televised, and Michael Franti, who's a contemporary artist, who's a direct kind of descendant culturally from Gil Scott-Heron, Boots Riley, Dr. Dre, DJ Spooky. There's just so many exciting things happening culturally as well to accompany the hard intellectual work which people like, you know, Chomsky do, and Tariq Ali and Howard Zinn and many others. I think we should have a two-track strategy there, not to forget the culture, but to have it right alongside with us.
David Barsamy, and I agree with you that I think your new book, the interview book with Chomsky, is the best of the interview books you've done or anyone has ever done with Noam Chomsky. I've read, I think, most of them, if not all of them. I've read a lot of Chomsky. This really crystallizes a lot of his thinking on a broad range of issues, including media, especially, though, on foreign policy, the U.S. role in the world, and militarism. But it's a superb introduction or summation of sort of the Chomsky worldview, put in a way that is understandable to someone who's not, you know, getting a PhD in politics or international relations, but it's accessible, I think, to anyone with a pulse, really, who pays attention to the world at all. Let's talk a little bit about Chomsky. And the reason I know Noam Chomsky is a very modest man and would never discuss, is very uncomfortable discussing himself personally. So I'm asked about him a lot by people because they know that I'm friends of his. I know you're closer, very close to him. And just a little bit about his personality, what it's like to work with Noam Chomsky. What sort of person is he?
Well, I just did a long interview, in fact, with Radio 101 in Zagreb, Croatia, in English, on Chomsky. They wanted to know, you know, who is he? Why is he important? So I've been kind of thinking of these things over the last few days. He's remarkable in many ways. Of course, you know, as an intellectual power, his ability to crystallize and to take disparate information and to synthesize it into something that is very coherent is quite exceptional. I really don't know anyone else that has that kind of ability to draw from such a wide range of information. For example, in the course of doing this book, I mean, I was astonished that he's reading or somehow got a hold of some obscure U.S. Navy journal, which had an article which he cited. So this practically misses nothing. And in dealing with him personally, which is, I think, what a lot of people are interested in, my own relationship began with Chomsky with a simple letter, and I wasn't expecting a reply, and I got one. This was back in the days when there were postage stamps and handwritten letters and envelopes. People will recall those halcyon days.
Yeah, pre-email.
Pre-email, yeah.
Pre-faxes.
And that started a correspondence, and then we did our first interview in 1984 that was broadcast. I've always found him from the very beginning to be unpretentious. There are no power plays here. There's not a sense that, you know, you're in the presence of a genius, and you are, of course, but he doesn't freight the encounter with that kind of bearing. He's very, very low key. And one example I give is, and I've seen it myself, you know, I'm an eyewitness to this. He will spend an hour with a high school student who's writing an article for the local high school paper and keep a Nobel Prize winner waiting out in his office. He treats people equally. And I think that is also just so inspiring to me and commendable, and speaks to his egalitarian instincts, which I think are run very deep and really speak to who he is. He doesn't play favorites. He's quite equal in his dealings, and he's got a great sense of humor. He is so funny, and I mean the irony is just dripping virtually if you hear any of his public talks. And I just finished editing one. He just gave the Iqbal Ahmed lecture in Hampshire College in Amherst just a couple of weeks ago, and that will probably be heard on WILL in the coming weeks, actually probably not this Saturday, but the Saturday after. And it's about, so-called democracy promotion, and I've actually given it a title, Washington's Messianic Mission. He inspires lots of people in the United States and all over the world. I'm constantly being, asked about him and what kind of guy he is. And, there's this simplicity about him. And I've also seen him. I mean, I don't do that well with stress, and I don't think most people do. We get a little edgy and a little tight. I've found him to be I've seen him in very, very difficult situations where he just keeps this equilibrium. I know he doesn't do yoga. I know he's not a vegan. He's not practicing any Eastern esoteric spiritual discipline, but he's got this quality of not being perturbed.
Yeah, no, David Barsamian, our guest today on Media Matters. I'm your host, Bob McChesney. Barsamian, of course, the executive producer of Alternative Radio, which can be heard here on WILL every Saturday at 6 and is heard nationwide on community and public stations. Barsamian is also the author of numerous books, including the brand new interview book with Noam Chomsky called Imperial Ambitions, Conversations on the Post 9/11 World. This book, I think, really sums up the key themes in Chomsky's political project better than any book of Chomsky's I've ever read. It's extraordinarily accessible. I think it's a commendation to you, David, what a good editing job you did of focusing the book to make it so accessible. And I urge people interested in Chomsky's work to look at this book. And we're talking now about Noam Chomsky, the person. We don't want to dwell on the individual. And I know if Noam Chomsky ever heard that we'd spent 5 or 10 minutes talking about him as a person, he would gag because of his modesty. But let's talk about some of the ideas in this book, the stuff that that is focused on in Imperial Ambitions, David. What would you say, the main points that Chomsky returns to, the sort of the central issues he thinks people should know about?
Well, I think the idea of positing alternatives, not just having a critique, which is important. We have to document what is going on. We have to organize our analysis, make it as taut and as precise and as acute as possible. At the same time, I'm talking collectively here, we who imagine a different society, a different media, a different U.S. foreign policy, a different political culture and climate, we have to imagine what another world might look like. And I posed that question to him, actually. Another world is possible. It's the theme of the World Social Forum, which is held almost annually in Porto Alegre. They were in Mumbai a couple of years ago, and I think this year they're having regional World Social Forums. And I found his answer very interesting because I asked him, you know, what would it look like? And he said, well, you can start with small things. For example, I think it would be an improvement if the United States became as democratic as Brazil. That doesn't sound like a utopian goal. But just compare the two most recent elections here and in Brazil. In Brazil, where there are vibrant popular movements, people were able to elect a president, Lula, from their own ranks. Maybe they don't like everything he's doing, but he's an impressive figure. He's a former auto worker. I don't think he even went to college, and they were able to elect him president. That's inconceivable in the United States. Here you vote for one or another rich boy from Yale. That's because we don't have popular organizations, and they do. And Chomsky's always talking about the need to organize, to have formations on the ground working on issues. I mean, just look what the East Timor Action Network was able to do. Just look at what the work of the solidarity groups during the 1980s were able to accomplish in Central America and elsewhere. And today, I mean, the peace movement, also called the anti-war movement, is quite impressive. Cindy Sheehan has really, I think, broken through, along with Katrina and, of course, Iraq, has broken through this kind of monochromatic one-note samba about support our troops and stay the course and honor the sacrifice of those who have fallen, et cetera, et cetera. Everyone has heard the cliches and platitudes repeated over and over again. And, again, that speaks to one of the major themes of Chomsky's work, is breaking through the propaganda cordon, liberating the mind. You know, it's kind of taking the burqa off ourselves and looking also inward in terms of how deeply we are colonized as well. People who may not find that very flattering, or maybe not even accurate in some instances. But I find a lot of people on the left also replicate very retrogressive kinds of ideas about patriarchy and gender relations and race and class. And so we also need to be able to look at ourselves and to be honest. And that is, of course, a central theme of Chomsky over and over again, about the need to speak the truth, not only to elite power, but also among ourselves and to ourselves. He's brutally honest in that way. He's always talking, you know, he always feels that, you know, I've never done enough, he says. I could have done more. I could have spoken out earlier about the Vietnam War. I could have been more active on East Timor much earlier. So he's always critiquing himself as well.
We're talking to David Barsamian today, Media Matters. I'm your host, Bob McChesney. Barsamian's the founder and director of the weekly syndicated radio program Alternative Radio, which can be heard right here on WILL every 6 p.m. on Saturday nights. And Barsamian's written numerous books. We've lost count of them. Many of them fine interview books, several with Noam Chomsky. His new book, which is already a bestseller, is an interview book with Noam Chomsky, Imperial Ambitions, Conversations on the Post-9/11 World. But David Barsamian can talk about a lot of issues. He's interviewed such prominent people as Howard Zinn, Tariq Ali, Arundhati Roy. The list goes on and on. He's written at length himself about the state of public broadcasting, nonprofit, non-commercial media, and I think it's fair to say he's an expert on those subjects. So if you'd like to call in with a question or comment for David Barsamian, the number 333-9455, our toll-free number 1-800-222-9455. And let me make a couple of announcements before we get back to David. Next weekend, the Independent Media Center right here in Urbana is hosting a radio barn raising, launching the new community radio station WRFU. So if you're in town, if you're interested in that, it's a big public event. There are going to be speakers, all sorts of things happening over at the Indy Media Center in downtown Urbana, the radio barn raising. And I'm sure you can go to the Indy Media Center website and learn more about it. Also, next week, our guest on this program will be Robert Greenwald, the filmmaker, whose new film, Walmart, The High Cost of Low Prices, has been getting considerable attention recently, even making the front page of the New York Times, and certainly getting some attention down in Arkansas at the Walmart headquarters. The film itself is going to be shown on November 17th, 11 days from today at 7 p.m. in the basement of the Education Building. That's November 17th, 7 p.m. in the basement of the Education Building. Admission is free to that. So make sure you get to the barn raising, the radio barn raising next week, and listen to the show to hear about Robert Greenwald and the new film, Walmart, The High Cost of Low Price, 1 week from today. David Barsamian, what about the indie media movement? What do you make of that?
Well, first of all, I want to, I make a lot of it, but I do want to say how thrilled I am to hear about those things happening in the Urbana-Champaign area, the fact that there's an indie media center, and might I hazard a guess that WFRU is free, Radio Free Urbana?
Oh, you're very clever. We can't get one past you, Barsamian.
It was a slider high and inside, but, you know, I was able to pick it up.
You did. You did indeed.
And of course, Robert Greenwald is you know, not just noted for the new documentary, Walmart, but a series of extraordinary films he's made, Outfoxed, Unprecedented, Uncovered. These films are getting a huge national audiences. Again, this is something that we could not have imagined just a few years ago, the huge surge in independent documentaries such as Control Room, such as Peace Propaganda and the Promised Land. There's a whole range of things, you know. There's The Corporation that was produced in Canada. Remarkable films about different media as well as foreign policy issues. And I think Satjali and his work at the Media Education Foundation has really produced a number of excellent documentaries. And the role of advertising, for example, and how women are pictured in very negative ways. He's also done one on 9/11 hijacking catastrophe. So these are very positive developments. And I know this, you know, a lot of times, and too often for my taste, and I think it really turns young people off, too many progressives are negative about how awful things are and don't have any money and there's nobody out there and nobody cares. And that's not what I find, actually. I think, you know, if you have a positive attitude, if you exude some enthusiasm and present solutions to people, not just critique, that there is an audience out there. And just look at another incredible development. Amy Goodman's program, Democracy Now!, began as a temporary program on 5 Pacifica radio stations in 1996. Today, this one-hour daily program is being aired on over 380 radio and TV stations. I mean, this is, extraordinary, an extraordinary development, and it speaks to, I think, the enormous demand out there for independent, outside, you know, the corporate think box, the groupthink that kind of dominates the media. The indie media movement has been, I think, very forceful, very focused, and is growing by leaps and bounds. I mean, we still have, of course, you know, final victory is not yet, you know, within sight, but it's certainly it's being generated. I think all the ingredients are there now. The workers are there now. Speaking of Pacifica, they've got some incredibly talented and young women who are working for them now. Ara Bogado is now hosting the Free Speech Radio News. Sonali Kolhatkar is hosting a daily program on KPFK in Los Angeles called Uprising, a daily 1 hour. There's Deepa Fernandez in New York, formerly of Free Speech Radio News, now of she's hosting the morning show on WBAI. I know I hate to get into laundry lists because you know you're bound to leave out at least 20 people, but these are just three names that, and three young, dynamic, brilliant women that are out there doing terrific work. And that's why I'm very encouraged wherever I go, and traveling. I was just in Northern California. I'm going to be in the Colorado Mountains this week. I spoke, in New Mexico a couple of weeks ago. It's just been nonstop. There is an audience out there. We're fine-tuning our message, and that audience is growing. Media activism is a major issue. Of course, I wish we were doing TV right now because I have to confess, Bob, I'm dressed in black because of, I'm so upset about Kenneth Tomlinson, someone that you admire tremendously, being forced off the board of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. This is indeed a sad day in America.
But, some of our listeners might not be completely familiar with the story of Tomlinson. We've done shows that have referred to him in the past, but you've written a book about public broadcasting, David. What's your assessment of the state of public broadcasting in the United States today, radio and television? And now I'm talking about the mainstream NPR stations like we're on right here at WILL and the television system PBS.
Well, I think it's become, tremendously timid over the years. It was never, radical in a progressive sense. It was never cutting edge. But it did have some sparks. It did have some grist to it years ago. I think back to the very first All Things Considered broadcast was in 1971, and they covered May Day Live with, Vox Pop right in the street. That's not something they would do now, because when you do a Vox Pop, when you, just randomly talk to people on the street, you might get very uncomfortable answers. And now they're much more tame. They've been put in a box. They've been under relentless, of course, political attack that they're somehow left liberal. They're under financial attack all the time. Their budgets are being threatened. And this has, I think, induced a collective kind of, well, we'll back off. We'll do the ping-pong journalism. We'll get our golden Rolodex of pundits and experts, and, representing the left will be someone from the Brookings Institution, and representing, the right will be the American Enterprise Institute. And that's about the range of opinion. I was just looking at an interview, actually, with Juan Williams, who's one of their senior reporters and commentators, an interview he did with Condoleezza Rice, which was quite amazing. I mean, I had to read it several times. I remember listening to it, and there's not a single question about Iraq. Here's Rice, one of the architects of the Iraq War, someone who, as National Security Advisor and now as Secretary of State, might be, if we had a different kind of political culture in this country, might be indicted for war crimes, for the planning and waging of aggressive war upon a country that was not threatening you. And Williams simply is talking, I have the text right in front of me, talking about Rice's talents as a classical pianist and how well she plays, and had she pursued this, she might have been a professional pianist. Then he's talking about, in the out cue, Secretary Rice describes herself as a package, black, female, 5'8". She'll begin her day today at Stanford, working out with the university's football team before heading off for another fence-mending mission abroad. This is Juan Williams, NPR News, San Francisco. That's the tenor of the entire interview with Rice. I find it simply baffling that there was no editor there, screaming into his earpiece, ask her about Iraq.
Mm-hmm. We're talking to David Barsamian today on Media Matters. I'm your host, Bob McChesney, here in WILL AM 580 in beautiful Urbana, Illinois. Barsamian, of course, is the director and founder of Alternative Radio, the weekly radio program heard right here on WILL AM every Saturday at 6 p.m., the author of numerous books, including the brand new Imperial Ambitions, Conversations on the Post-9/11 World, which is a series of interviews that were edited, recent interviews, I might add, edited by David Barsamian, interviews with Noam Chomsky, and I think it is the best introduction or summary of Chomsky's view of the world today and politics today, bringing on the big themes of his career. Available, already a bestseller. It's just out, Imperial Ambitions. Congratulations on that, David. Thanks. If you'd like to call in and speak with David Barsamian, the number here, 333-9455, our toll-free number, 1-800-222-9455. Let's go to the phones right now. Line 1, Champaign County, you're on the air with David Barsamian.
Good afternoon. Always good to hear from you, David.
Thank you.
I wanted to ask if you – I'm just going to chime in on not the radio end of things, but on the public broadcasting. We miss Moyers more than ever, I think, in the last couple of days, because this whole episode of the special on health and then the special on AIDS that Brancaccio did on Now, I found it to be absolutely the most ridiculous and off-the-point thing, and I want to know if you have anybody that speaks about Big Pharma. There was no critique of the U.S. role in making sure that generics didn't get out to people. Maybe John Nichols in his book on Cheney talks about Cheney's specific role of completely torpedoing a worldwide agreement on how that was going to be implemented. And it was so frustrating. I'm glad I'm allowed to vent here, and I hope you have somebody that you can recommend where this is chronicled. I'm sure Public Citizen has the story, but I've never heard anybody explain that. So whether you have anybody that you broadcast in the past, maybe I've missed it, but
well, there is, of course, Steffi Woolhandler and her partner David Himmelstein. They're both in Cambridge. They certainly talk about that. Stephen Bezruchka, who's not very well known, I've done a couple of programs with him on these issues. He is an ER doctor in Seattle, so he sees a lot of these things in a very unvarnished way, because he's dealing with the, collapse of the healthcare system and the AIDS crisis. Chomsky himself does talk quite a bit about these issues. Paul Farmer's name comes to mind. Mm-hmm. He has done an enormous amount around AIDS. He's written about it. He lectures about it. He's certainly a voice that should be given much more prominence. I think it's, an absolutely critical issue. Yes, I agree with you that we are missing Moyer's one-hour program. It is now in its truncated version. With Brancaccio, as you mentioned, he seems to be a nice guy, but I don't know if he has – he certainly doesn't have the chops that Moyers has, and I don't think that's just a reflection of his age. It may be, other factors, but it's certainly interesting. We're talking about, Kenneth Thomason stepping down and perhaps facing criminal prosecution for – various deeds while he was chair of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, because it was Tomlinson that took on Moyers, and I think that Moyers pinned him, particularly at that historic St. Louis speech that he gave on May 15th, a terrific work that I actually broadcast on alternative radio. It's called In Defense of Public Broadcasting. If we are to have a decent and I think cutting-edge national public radio and TV net system in this country, we need somehow to isolate it from the political vagaries of the budget and the endless political attacks, which, again, if the idea that somehow these broadcast entities have a left liberal slant is it defies imagination, description. As McChesney himself has said many times, if you come to this without prejudice, it's very clear where the political bias is, and it's not on the left. Just, anyone could do this kind of work. It is kind of boring in a way. Chomsky calls it clerical work. You just listen to All Things Considered every day. Anyone can do it. Anyone listening can become a media pundit in that sense. Listen to Morning Edition and All Things Considered. Watch the News Hour with Jim Lehrer if you can, or Charlie Rose Show, and just see who the guests are, number one, what institutions they represent, and also the topics that are covered and the way the questions are framed. I think, you know, the answers will become self-evident.
David Barsamian, you have referred already to many outstanding journalists in the alternative and independent media. You were just talking about Bill Moyers and what's happening at PBS. The caller was, too. What media, mainstream media, do you consume? I mean, not that you necessarily approve of it or buy into it, but what is your media diet of mainstream media? And then we can talk about alternative media, too.
Well, I read the New York Times, the Wall Street Journal. I look at Business Week, Fortune, all the business magazines, which is, again, something that Chomsky, you know, taught me to do and pay attention to, because the business class needs to know what's going on. They need accurate information. Everybody else has got to get propaganda and get into line with the kind of party line. But the executives, you know, sitting in boardrooms in lower Manhattan, they've got to know precisely what the situation is in Indonesia, because they're thinking about a multi-million-dollar investment in that country. So there in the business pages, you can actually find, I think, very graphic information. Also, I mean, there's a lot of good information in the Wall Street Journal and the New York Times. I mean, the aberration of the editorial page aside of the Wall Street Journal, which is not only recondite, but it speaks to some kind of troglodyte disorder, representing, incredibly reactionary views, in my opinion. But the reporting is often very, very solid. You can get great information about what's happening to pension plans in the Wall Street Journal, as well as healthcare. These things are reported on. As Chomsky always says, you know, if you go to paragraph 27, you know, you're likely to get some extremely important information. And sometimes you don't have to go that far. In the Washington Post, in paragraph 8, in a story that has been quoted several times, an editor from the Washington Post said, you know, in response to criticism of the Post's coverage or lack of coverage of Iraq, she said that most people don't read that far to get the information. That is, when they get the official story in the first few paragraphs, if there's any counter evidence, it's not presented until much later in the story.
We're talking to David Barsamian today on Media Matters. I'm your host, Bob McChesney. Barsamian, the author of the new book of interviews with Noam Chomsky called Imperial Ambitions, Conversations on the Post-9/11 World, published by Metropolitan Books and already way atop the bestseller list. Book I urge people interested in Chomsky's work to get their hands on.
Let me say also, to complete the question,
sure, yeah, please do.
Other media. I mean, I look at The New Yorker. I look at Harper's. They often have excellent articles. Cy Hirsch, of course, in the New Yorker. Louis Lapham, John MacArthur in Harper's often have excellent articles and commentary. And then, of course, there is all the alternative media as well. And, you know, I have to watch television and listen to radio. It's kind of, you know, it goes with the job, as it were. And so, you know, I have to subject myself to, an occasional Larry King special on Natalie Holloway, who's been missing for over 100 days now in Aruba, and things like that.
Well, let's go back to the phone lines now. We have three callers patiently waiting. If you want to call in, we'll have time for you. 333-9455. The toll-free number here at Media Matters at WILL-AM580 is 1-800-222-9455. Line 2, Urbana, you're on the air with David Barsamian.
Yes, good afternoon, David.
Hi.
A single question. It's a little complex in a way because I'm rather stunned that we've not been able to come up with and showcase a spokesperson for the Iraqi left, which is actually substantial. There are three factions of the Communist Party in Iraq, and it probably represents at least 15, if not 20% of the constituency, and it's just like obliterated. And it just kind of boggles my mind, and I'm wondering what your take on it is. And thank you for taking my call.
See, that's a great question. David, what do you know about that?
Well, historically, the Communist Party in Iraq has had a major influence on politics in that country, and it was a very large formation until it was decimated in a U.S.-sponsored coup in 1963, which brought the Ba'ath Party, that's the Arabic word for Renaissance Party, Saddam Hussein's political formation, brought the Ba'ath Party to power. And the U.S. Embassy, in a kind of classic case which has been repeated elsewhere, Indonesia and other countries, supplied the Ba'ath coup leaders with a list of the left. And a lot of these people were killed or driven into exile. Today, it's not quite clear. I don't know if I share the figures that the caller mentioned, that it represents 15 to 20%. I do think there is a number of people who do follow a left line in Iraq. But I also have been talking to someone recently, an Iraqi woman, Hanan al-Bayati, and that's an interview that's published in a recent issue of the International Socialist Review, in which she says, and she's in a better position to know, she is Iraqi, that there are now 10 to 12 kind of communist groups inside Iraq, and some of them are actually supporting the Ibrahim Jaafari regime, which is the kind of the U.S. stand-in. So it's difficult to say without being able, without spending a lot of time in Iraq, and I haven't been in the country. I was recently in southeastern Turkey along the border with Iraq, and I can talk about that to some extent if you like, but I don't have enough information about the communists in Iraq to make any kind of educated or uneducated comment on it.
David Barsamian, before we get to the next caller, so just shifting, taking a similar question but shifting it now to another region of the world, Latin America, an area I know you've concerned with and studied and been written about for as long as I've known you. President Bush, of course, in Argentina for the meetings this weekend. Latin American politics seem to have changed dramatically in the past 5, 10, 15 years. What do most Americans not know about what's going on in Latin America?
Well, they don't know about the rise of NGOs and politically progressive formations, such as Via Campesina, such as the Movimiento Sin Tierra, the Landless Workers Movement in Brazil, the movement in Bolivia led by Evo Morales, who is probably poised to become the next president of that country. People do hear a little bit about Chavez, Hugo Chavez in Venezuela. Most of it, of course, is negative. He's always described, and I just saw this headline, as the Venezuelan strongman. An interesting kind of formulation. He's also described as a fiery leader. As opposed to what, a comatose leader? What are these are terms of propaganda, and of course they immediately poison the well. You already understand that this is going to be a negative appraisal of Hugo Chavez, who I have looked into quite a bit. He's been elected several times democratically.
In fact, if I can interrupt, I don't know that for sure. Maybe you do. To my understanding, he may well be, in terms of popular vote, if not the most popular Latin American politician ever, on the short list.
I think that's absolutely true. He has approval ratings of around 70% in Venezuela. And, earlier we talked about the surge in excellent documentary films. Well, there's one called The Revolution Will Not Be Televised, made by two independent filmmakers from Ireland about the 2002 April coup to overthrow Chavez that the U.S. was deeply implicit in and complicit. And so I think, again, Chavez has become a kind of lightning rod. He's being linked to Castro and communism and all the formulaic reductionist kinds of categories that the U.S. government and then the media immediately pick up on, like he's a strongman and he's a fiery leader, and you learn that his oratory verges on the demagogic, things like that, you know, very uncomplimentary. I think the movements in Latin America today really represent a backlash and a response to the iniquitous so-called free trade agreements, which have produced greater poverty in Latin America than ever before. And this, mind you, these free trade agreements are passed off as improving the lots of ordinary people. Well, that's not the experience of ordinary people. Argentina itself went through one of the greatest economic collapses in modern history. And again, going to independent media, films, Naomi Klein and Avi Lewis.
No, David, I hate to cut you off here on this point, but we have a full bank of callers and only a few minutes left, and I want to give them a shot.
Okay, I'm sorry.
No, you're doing great. We could go on and on.
See Naomi Klein's film, The Take, about Argentina.
Yeah, in fact, we've had Naomi on the show to talk about the film, and it's been shown here in Urbana. Line 4, Eureka, you're on the air with David Barsamian.
Yes, good to talk to you. Two short questions. What is your sense of what is going to be happening with the trial of Scooter Libby, and would it reach Karl Rove? And secondly, I used to hear you on Radio for Peace International in Costa Rica. I wonder if you could describe any knowledge you have of it and when and if it might return to the air. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Okay, David?
Very quickly, let me start with Radio for Peace International in San Jose, Costa Rica. It was closed down by the university there a couple of years ago in a dispute. It is still broadcasting, as far as I know, on the Internet. So if you do a search for Radio for Peace or RFPI.org, I think you'll be able to find it. I hope it comes back on the airwaves very soon. How high will Fitzgerald's investigation go? Not high enough is the answer, because the real issues, of course, are totally kept from public view, and that is the supreme international war crime of launching an aggressive war against a country that was not threatening you. This is not being talked about. The Democrats aren't talking about it. They're all focusing on, you know, who outed Valerie Plame, and it's not an insignificant issue, but it pales in comparison to the planning and waging of aggressive war and the ongoing occupation in Iraq. I think we need to have a sense of balance and proportion here. I'm sorry Valerie Plame's career may be over or she was in some way jeopardized, but look at the comparisons simply pale, with tens of thousands, perhaps hundreds of thousands of Iraqis, Afghans, who have been killed and are being killed, the enormous cost, moral as well as economic, to the United States, to the American people. That's where this investigation should go.
Okay. David Barsamian, our guest today on Media Matters. Let's go back to the phones. Line 1, Urbana, thanks for your patience. You're on the air with David Barsamian.
Yes, I'd like your guest impression upon the unfunded liabilities being run up by our federal government. I cite this morning's commentary in today's Gazette. Unfunded liabilities in 2000, they totaled $24.4 trillion. By 2004, after President Bush and Congress increased spending and cut taxes, they reached $43.3 trillion. I'll listen on radio. Thank you.
Well, thank you very much.
Well, I think the long-term economic future of the United States, and, you know, we're talking about the country that we're living in, is in great peril. It is being deeply compromised by reckless economic policies, the well-reported on now tax cuts for the rich, the movement to end the death tax, which is euphemistically called the estate tax. This has deeply cut into revenue and has resulted in all kinds of cutting of Medicaid, a tax on Social Security, but more important, it has put the U.S. in hock. It literally cannot pay its bills. from Katrina to Iraq to Afghanistan to Rita to ongoing crises, I think anyone who calls himself or herself a conservative has to be deeply worried about the economic recklessness of this particular regime. And someone like Connie Mack, who is not the baseball owner's, but his grandson, in fact.
Oh, it is his grandson.
It is his grandson.
I had no idea.
Yeah, he's a top Bush official in terms of economic policy. And he was asked recently by Deborah Solomon in the New York Times, well, you know, how's the government going to operate? You know, where's it going to get the money? And he said, well, no worries. We'll borrow it from Saudi Arabia. And, you know, if we don't get enough from them, we'll get it from China. I mean, this is an economic policy? I mean, it's got to, you know, be deeply unsettling, again, to classic conservatives, you know, as Chomsky would say, like William Howard Taft, for example, live within your means, you know, balancing budgets and things like that. The future is very, very uncertain, and the whole ball of wax could unwind. I'll speak very quickly because I know we're running out of time, but just a few months ago, South Korea hinted that it might go to the euro in terms of conducting its international business rather than the dollar. And that was on a Friday. I think Wall Street went into a huge nosedive that day, and Washington went into a panic, worked the phones like crazy that weekend to Seoul. And on Monday, the South Korean government said, well, it was just a trial balloon. We're staying with the dollar. That's just, I think, one example of how weak and fragile the whole system is.
David Barsamian is our guest today in Media Matters. We've only got time for one last caller, and I think we've got one coming in. We've had a number of callers who grew impatient, hung up. I apologize we couldn't get to you soon enough. But here, let's go back to the phone lines. Line 4, or cell phone, you're on the air with David Barsamian.
Yeah, hi. Great show. Thanks for doing this important work. You know, one of the things I find most disturbing about the war has been, and the media coverage of it, has been the discussion and the coverage of the total amount of Iraqi civilian casualties and how the media has just completely ignored that. And I'm not jaded enough to think that Americans don't care about the number of Iraqi civilian casualties, because I think if they really knew, this is something that could really be quite divisive in this country and might lead to an expedited pull out of Iraq. And I just want to get your thoughts on what might be the best way to try to get that idea through and to get the actual numbers through to the American public. I'll hang up now. Thank you.
Thank you very much. And David, you've got about 30 seconds or so.
Well, you know, it's through programs like this. It's through books like Imperial Ambitions. It's through alternative media. It's through Common Dreams. It's through Truthout, Buzzflash, ZNet, Alternet, all the different websites that are out there where you can get this kind of information and then circulate it among your friends. It's not difficult to find, but you do have to, you know, make a little effort to get the information. The Lancet magazine report from over a year ago clearly states that over 100,000 Iraqis are dead. Let me give my website a couple of times. It's alternativeradio.org.
Go slow. That's okay. We have enough time. Alternativeradio.org.
Yeah, alternativeradio.org. You can see all the books there and all the programs, including one with University of Illinois at Champaign-Urbana.
Well, you must have been hitting rock bottom that day.
Professor of Communication, I think it's McChesney. I think there's a program with him called The Problem of the Media. It's an interview I did with Professor McChesney at the St. Louis Conference on the Media. There's, you know, new programs with Noam Chomsky, Cy Hirsch, Amy Goodman, Chris Hedges, a whole range of people. So I hope people go to the website, alternativeradio.org, or call our toll-free number, 1-800-444-1977, 1-800-444-1977, and support independent media. It's important.
David Barsamian, thank you so much for being our guest today on Media Matters. You've been a terrific guest, as always. David Barsamian is the co-author or author of Imperial Ambitions, Conversations on the Post-9/11 World, a book of interviews, edited interviews with Noam Chomsky, just came out, already on the bestseller list. I urge people to read it. David, again, thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks a lot, Bob.
In 1 week from today, my guest will be Robert Greenwald, whose new film, Walmart, The High Cost of Low Prices, is taking the nation by storm. That film will be appearing in town in 10 days, and we'll give you more information about it next week. And remember, next weekend, the BART Radio Barn Raising by the Indy Media Center in Urbana for the new community radio station WRFU. I want to thank Andrew Boyle, my producer, Brett Polson, my technical director. My name is Bob McChesney. Back in 167 hours with the next show. Thank you very much.
Today's broadcast is made possible with support from the Craft League of Champaign-Urbana, presenting their 23rd annual Arts and Crafts Show and Sale on November 19th and 20th at the Urbana Civic Center. Open Saturday 10 to 5 and Sunday 10 to 4. More information at 367-9546.
This afternoon in Champaign-Urbana, becoming partly sunny, breezy with the high in the upper 50s and west winds 15 to 25 miles per hour with gusts up to 35 miles per hour. Tonight, partly cloudy this evening, then clearing with the low around 40 degrees and southwest winds around 10 miles per hour in the evening, becoming light. Tomorrow, partly sunny with the high in the upper 60s and south winds 10 to 15 miles per hour. You're listening to WILL Urbana, made possible by the support of our listeners, the friends of WILL. It's 2 p.m. The Tavis Smiley Show is next.